morning, everybody. My name is Taras Lichuk. I'm a postdoctoral researcher with the Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada Brandon Research Center in Brandon, Manitoba. Today, I will be talking about the effects of input management, cropping diversity, environmental and terrain covariates on a long-term field experiment implemented in Canadian prairies. I'd like to provide you with a short, small background about this long-term experiment. It's called the Alternative Cropping System, or the ACS study, and it was initiated in 1994 and was implemented at the Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada Research Farm in Scott, Saskatchewan, and it's noted here with a star on the map. And the farm is located on the coarse, loamy, textured, mesotypic haploboral soil. And it's the study just completed its final cycle in 2013. Originally, plans were for implementation of four periods of six-year cycles, so the study was supposed to last for 24 years. Unfortunately, they didn't get funding for the last cycle, so we only have a 19 years of data, but however, by saying this, I have to say that this study is quite unique because this is one of the few existing long-term field rotation experiments, which is unique for Canadian prairies and I would say quite outstanding for the entire continent because there are not that many studies that have so much data that accumulated over those years. And this picture shows you just aerial view of the study. You can see two of the four replicates here. I'll talk more about experimental design in a few moments. Primarily, there were two objectives of this study. The first objective was to assess the interaction of agricultural input and cropping diversity and basically estimate its effect on crop yield and environmental quality and sustainability in the region. And I'll be discussing these effects along with effects of growing season precipitation, growing degree days, and several terrain attributes on wheat, barley, and canola yield, and I'll discuss how these affected yield in the field along with fixed effects. So the study consisted of a 3x3 matrix of treatments. There were three input levels, organic, reduced, and high. And similarly, there were three levels of cropping diversity, low diversity, diversified annual grains, and diversified annual perennials. And this is a breakdown of the input levels. Under organic input, no pesticide or herbicides were used. The tillage was used for crop and weed management. And similarly, there was no fertilizer applied in this level. Under reduced input level, there was a minimum number of tillage operations. Primarily, herbicides were used for weed management, and fertilizer application and rates were based on yield goals or soil test numbers. Under high input level, it was based on conventional systems, so this is where tillage, fertilizer, herbicides, and pesticides occurred at the full extent based on the conventional recommendations for this input. This is a breakdown of the cropping diversity levels. So low diversity was based on the intensive crop system, which used primarily wheat and green manure. Under the diversified annual grain was a combination of wheat, barley, fall rye, and canola. And diversified annual perennials were a combination of alfalfa, wheat, barley, mustard, and canola. And this is the experimental design in the field. You can see four replicates here, and the input here is a main fixed effect, and it's noted by the first three letters in the acronym. And diversity is followed after the dash, and it's a random effect which is nested within input. Few slides, I'm going to talk about the statistical analysis. So yield was analyzed as a dependent variable in partition analysis and partial least squares, and agricultural input, cropping diversity, precipitation, growing degree days, and terrain attributes were treated as independent variables. In addition, the 1990 year barley yield was 1990 year barley yield from a uniformity fertilizer trial was analyzed, and its spatial dependence between yield and soil properties in the field was established with the semi-variograms, and the barley yield from this year was used as additional covariate in the analysis. So we used partial least squares and partition analysis to identify covariates that were later used in analysis of variance and covariance. By including annual precipitation and temperature, as well as terrain attributes, we accounted for the temporal and spatial variability in yield associated with environmental factors. So this is beginning the results section. This slide here shows the effects of input on wheat yield, and yield is shown on y-axis, and the 6-year cycles are shown on the horizontal axis, as well as the long-term 19-year average. So you can see that yield in the high and red systems and reduced systems was higher than yield in organic systems. This slide here shows the effect of each input by cropping diversity combination on crop yield, and you can see that yield was lowest under organic input low diversity system, and organic input diversified annual perennials, and it was highest in the high input system low diversity and high input system diversified annual grains. And this table here shows the analysis of variance, describes the effects of input diversity, precipitation, and growing degree days on wheat yield observed in the field. And it's a long-term 19-year average yield. So what we found interesting is that growing season precipitation in April and growing season precipitation in June accounted for more of the variation in wheat yield than the input and diversity. And similarly, the input and the growing degree days in July accounted for a similar proportion of variation in wheat yield. And had we not included these, the precipitation growing degree days as covariates in this analysis, we would simply assign differences in observed yield due to input and diversity, the fixed effects. This table here shows the results. It's the analysis. It's the table from the partition analysis where you can see for select years effects of input diversity and terrain attributes on wheat yield in the field. And the effects of terrain attributes were mostly clearly pronounced in the dry or wet years of the study. So, for example, you can see in 1998, input and diversity accounted a little bit more than 50% of the variation in crop yield in the field, with the remaining variation explained by the terrain attributes. In 2006, input and diversity had no effect at all on yield, and terrain attributes explained the differences in observed yield. In 2010, which was the wettest year of the study, two-thirds of the variation in yield was explained by input and diversity, with the remainder explained by terrain attributes. Now going to barley, similar trend. You can see that the yield decreased among input systems and was highest in the high and red system and was lowest in organic. This one shows the effect of cropping diversity, and you can see that yield in the diversified annual grain rotation was highest for the high input and reduced input, and lowest in the organic input, and there were a similar trend occurred in the diversified annual perennial rotation. So this table here shows again analysis of variance, but in this case for long-term average barley yield. And again, it analyzes the, it describes the effects of input diversity, precipitation, and growing degree days on barley yield. And you can see that growing season precipitation in June was second most important attribute after input for mean annual barley yield, and July growing degree days was the third. So they were important factors to consider. For canola, yield was numerically but not statistically higher in the high system compared to reduced system, and canola was not grown in the under organic system. That's why it's not shown here. The this one shows effect of diversity, and you can see that yield was highest in under the low diversity, and was second highest in the diversified annual grains, and was lowest in the diversified annual perennials system. And this is the final table analysis of variance in this section, and you can see that in case for canola, growing season precipitation in July explained the greatest percentage of variability in the canola yield. Then the growing season precipitation in June and cropping diversity were second and the third important factors to consider. So this is a final table where which describes the effects of the fixed effects, precipitation, growing degree days, and terrain attributes in one analysis. And it's a combined yield for all three crops. And this is the 11-year average data for all three for combined yield for all three crops. And you can see that such terrain attributes as catchment area, planar curvature, upslope contributing area, and 1994 barley yield explain about 28% of variation in yield over the years. Growing degree days in April and precipitation in April explains for about 24% of variation in yield. And input was responsible and explained 39% variation in yield, and diversity explained a little over 9%. So three main conclusions from this study is that water was one of the major yield driving factors in the study. Yield was affected by agricultural input, terrain attributes, precipitation, growing degree days, and cropping diversity in this order. And we concluded that inclusion of precipitation, growing degree days, and terrain attributes in the analysis improved the analysis of fixed effects, which were in our case agricultural input and cropping diversity. And we encourage to consider micro topography, precipitation, and growing degree days whenever data from long-term field experiments is analyzed in the future. So with that, I'd like to acknowledge following individuals for their help in this project, and I'm also thankful for financial support for a postdoctoral fellowship from Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada. With that, I'd like to thank you for your attention. Please let me know if you have questions.
Time for a couple questions.
Yes.
Why do you have low products, low yielding organic management system? Would that be due to low nutrient availability or
the primarily reason because of the nitrogen stress, because there were no fertilizer used on the organic system, and yields were lower because the test would always show that there was a great deal of nitrogen stress for those plants grown under that system.
Another quick question: what percentage of growers around that area have organic management system?
It's a growing tendency. It's a growing tendency, and that's why it was included in the field experiment. Yeah. Yes.
What was the primary driving mechanism for this being water in the water? Was it surface runoff
It was mostly affected by profile curvature and planar curvature. Those were the two drivers.
Did you ever stick the blade in your soil that then caused that, or is that surface runoff?
It was surface and subsurface water movement. Yeah.
If I could just interject here, is our second speaker here? Okay, so we have a no-show, so we have more time for questions, and we're going to have to skip over the missing speaker and resume the next talk at 8:30, so we do have some additional.
Oh, okay. I can go for another 15 minutes with questions. That's fine.
There's more hands in the audience.
Sure.
It seems that the precipitation in April is an important factor. Since the grower has a chance to make adjustment at that time on his management, how do you think this could be incorporated into management decisions?
Maybe it can be, this can be considered in terms of planting dates, and I would say that usually in Scott, usually they don't, sometimes they plant crops in the early April, and sometimes they wait for another 2 weeks depending on the temperature. But in some years I've seen that they planted in mid-May depending on the temperature. So we know April precipitation is important. However, if it's still associated with the temperature that's not that will not be favorable for seed germination, that may be an issue. But that's a good question to think about. Thank you. Yes.
Is there any particular reason, or was there any particular reason not to provide other forms of nourishment in the organic system?
Oh,
to meet the nitrogen demand.
Well, I believe they applied once every cycle. They applied animal manure in the field. But that's all they were they decided to do, and it was just to make sure that the I guess the agricultural production remains clean from and people who prefer like organic food would be their needs would be satisfied. That's why primarily. Yeah.
How did you collect the
So what happened is in 1994, this entire field was sampled to the depths of 1.2 meter with whole range of soil properties. Okay, and then we used the Krieging procedure, and we created the digital elevation maps, and we created the we created semi-variograms for the parameters in the field, and that's how we accounted for the terrain attributes in the field. And we have a special technician who is doing just that, like from 9 to 5 every day for the studies. And it was that was a Krieging and semi-variograms. This is how it was done. Yes.
I have more of a general question. Obviously, there's been lots of measurements being done on this, and we know there's going to be winters and lawsuits under climate change. I'm in the leisure part of the Great Plains, so you're going to be, I think, in the winter. So these systems, I know essentially agriculture is on massive scales up there, and this diversified cropping sort of hedges your bet. What have you seen in the last couple of years with regards to climate and crop production and any movement in the private sector in going away from sort of the monoculture commodity approach?
Well, it's interesting you ask this question, because I did my PhD in University of Maryland, and I look at the effects of climate change on the agriculture in southeastern U.S., and I'm doing the same. I'm using different climate change projections for that particular area in Canadian prairies, where I'm projecting different climate change scenarios on the field, and we have this tremendous amount of data available, and we have these treatments established. So I'm trying to predict what will happen in the future, should we follow the same procedure like we followed the past 20 years? Which one will grow better? Which one will be a subject to more, under which scenarios more nitrogen leaching or pea runoff will occur, okay? And I'm trying to estimate what will happen, and that will give me an answer of which of those production systems is more sustainable in the future. I'm not sure if I'm answering your question fully.
No, very much so. And well, 2012 is just a good one. And, corn, for instance, essentially Nebraska, yeah, hit hard. Southeastern U.S., North Carolina, Piedmont, first time they ever got above cost, mm-hmm. because everybody else is hurting. But I know the southern Canadian part there, you guys did pretty well.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit more to eat. And so it's one of those things. Are people going to continue to gamble, or are they mm-hmm. going to start trying? Looks like some of your systems are hedging your bet systems to sort of optimize
mm-hmm.
some of those yields.
Yeah, and
that someone pointed out that April indicator might make them feel more secure that they
yeah.
control it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and usually it's predicted that there will be increase in the minimum temperature, so it's likely that the growing season will be somewhat expanded, and it may actually help to catch those that precipitation in April, and farmers may actually benefit from climate change in the prairies, because we will have a greater, it's likely that we'll have more precipitation and it will be somewhat warmer. However, with that goes the problem of increased demand of nutrients. Okay, because and that will result, that may result in the increased environmental pressure due to the increased nutrient transport. So all those things we have to consider. It's not black and white issue. Yeah.
And you didn't get extra funding for the next
round. I will know in March. I will know in March if we do. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes.
I had just a quick question. I saw a higher yield in the low diversity.
This is counterintuitive. I know it's that many people raise this question, because usually we should be able to see greater yields under diversified cropping, and it's like I don't know why, but you're not the first person who asked this question. Why we see greater yields in the low system? And I don't really have an answer for that. So. Because due to those soil sampling in 1994, what happened is that in 1994 it was a uniformity trial where in all treatments we only grew wheat, okay, and it was a uniform rate of fertilizer, okay, and then we measured the yield, and we also took the soil samples for all those soil to collect all that soil data, and then we made a digital elevation maps. We created, we followed the Cregan procedure, and we created the semivariogram. So basically, we established dependence between yield and terrain attributes in the field, and it was another covariate to include in the study. That's how we did it.
Well, you had a heck of a lot of questions.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much.